interstate 75, with a nervous fading beauty sitting by his side, and a pistol that he used to pave the way down the long black stretches of a dark highway. Ray bought his future with a pound of lead. Then he robbed a liquor store and left the clerk for dead. That kid should have put the money in a sack, but he didn't, and now there ain't no turning back. He's a desperate rider, he's a Jesse James. The best that he can hope for is a household name. There ain't nobody that a man can trust when all his headlines read notorious. East road with the lights off to avoid the roadblock. Ray killed the motor at the county line. Changed his Tennessee place to a lost tag sign. Sheila never asked what the boy had done, but she said she'd be his hostage if he needed one. Her mama raised her to be loyal and true, and she figured that's the least that she could do. She was lost and lonely on midnight ride, reluctant Bonnie to a poor man's flat. It ain't too easy when the man you love has got a reputation that's notorious. It ain't too easy when the man you love has got a reputation that's notorious. Outside of Knoxville when the lights flashed on and the siren started howling like hellhound dogs. Rick popped that Firebird into overdrive, swore he'd never let them take him alive. He was a desperate rider, he was Jesse James. The best he'd ever hoped for was a household name. The morning papers didn't say too much, but his obituary read notorious. The captain liked his picture, didn't say too much, but his obituary read notorious.
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. No, no. White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. Wake up, Tommy. Hey, this is a terrible Tommy in the bunker right here in north central Indiana on a blizzard day. I got up early and took my lady's car in to get the brakes fixed, and it got to snowing so bad you couldn't hardly see the road. I haven't looked out here lately, but I'm afraid to. It's a blizzard conditions here. I'm going to stay in the bunker all day long. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations for the show. And if you don't have it in for February, you better get to it. We try to get them in here by the 15th. That's tomorrow. So anyhow, that's it, and that's where you send your snail mail, and if you want to chip in for some shekels for the deserving prisoners, you can do that too, and I send it on to them, usually by postal money order. Or you can go up to our website and get their addresses right off there and send the money out to the through the federal office in Iowa. Yeah. And like that. Now, for state prisons, you need to get deposit slips sent to you by the prisoner and send it in that way, because if you don't, you can't just put it in an envelope and send it to a prisoner. No, they got red tape for everything, and different states are different, so anyhow. And then go up there to resist.com, the big giant racial separation website that's got everything on it from soup to nuts, hopefully more soup than nuts, and download a college education on the issue of race. Plus, there's a lot of books up there you can download, and like that, free of charge. All that stuff up there is free, except the first couple of weeks of a new show on the radio in the archives, because we need to do that to get a little bit of funds in here to fund the operation. But then after a couple of weeks or so, we'll normally get it on the regular archives where everybody can get a hold of it. Now, if everybody that listens to our radio shows out of the archives, the past shows, if every one of them would send us a dollar, we'd be in Fat City. But I've found that almost, I'd say 80% of the people involved in the racial struggle are cheap. Or they think somebody's getting rich. And that's sad, because, and normally when they do give money, they give it to the wrong people. The people that are just screwing around and whispering in your ear and traveling around the world and skiing in the Alps and gambling on the Mississippi and all that kind of good stuff. So anyhow, we want to encourage all those people out there to send $1 for the, if you're opening up the archives and listening to the past shows, like send me $1 a month or something like that to help out with the production. And now we're going into streaming. I'm not sure how that's going to work, but I know we have a well-qualified She-Wolf webmaster, and if it can be done, she will do it. So that's it there. So anyhow, it is the 14th of February, 2015, Saturn's Day. Yeah, this is the day the Jews used to go to synagogue, still do, a lot of them. And also, they used to worship the so-called god Saturnus. Yeah. And the Christians, they changed it over to Sunday, which was a proper thing to do because it's all related to the sun. Christianity, all of it's related to the sun. But the Jews wanted to be different. Yeah, they're different, all right, or at least a lot of them are, that's for sure. You know, I was debating a little bit on the internet with some of the guys, and most of them are right-wingers. And it's quite interesting because I had said something about white homosexuals can be racist too, and they jumped all over me. I said, well, if there's tactics and there's non-tactics, and if white homosexual wants to fight for the white race, I can't stop him, and I can't encourage him to do it either. So, because we're lone wolves, we don't go by organizational rules and bylaws. We need information. I pointed out to these right-wingers that Pastor Robert Miles had almost an in-house Jewish agent working with him, possibly a double agent, but there wasn't any proof that he was a double agent. And he was from New York City, and he did a lot of good work for Bob Miles. And there was a Jew homosexual, certainly worked a long time with Pastor Richard Butler, funded him quite a bit, and supplied him with a lot of inside information. So my position is quite simple. I don't advocate homosexuality as a lifestyle, because I'm a radical heterosexual. But on the other hand, like Hitler said, I'm not looking under every bed either. And I do know that at times, once in a while, I'd get contacted by groups of homosexuals, white homosexuals, like in San Francisco, and ask for help because the blacks were overrunning their neighborhoods. And if I could help them that way, I would. So, strategy, just like this Gestapo hired mainly Jewish prostitutes in Paris to do their work and spy. And they must have been fairly good looking or they wouldn't have done it. So anyhow, and then I told a guy, I said, look, I used this same Jewish agent that worked with Bob Miles to obtain information from the inside of the ADL. Yeah, he was able to gain entrance to the main ADL headquarters in New York City, and I wanted a file. Well, he got the file for me. So these people got to understand that this kind of war for survival of the white race, you have to have all kinds of weapons. Some of the weapons you may, the right wing with the Christian orientation, all that, they just see black and white. They can't see any gray. But every struggle has gray. Like Hitler had, Hitler knew very well that Ernst Röhm was a homosexual. Long before even Röhm went down to South America after a while and worked with training the Bolivian soldiers. Hitler knew he was, and Hitler pleaded with him to come back to Germany and take over the SA. So he did. So the nonsense about the Night of the Long Knives, you got to understand, had nothing to do with a few homosexuals. I'm sure it was a very small percentage of the SA, the main SA, that were homosexuals. But it was for other reasons, and that the big boys told Hitler, Thyssen and the boys, and I've told you many times, demanded that he suppress the SA because the SA was a true socialist, national socialist, with a big S on the socialist, organization. That's what National Socialism was, and they wanted changes in Germany, leveling the playing field, bringing a lot of the old-time moneyed people down a notch and spreading the money around for the workers. And these industrialists in Germany, they don't want any part of that, just like in this country, they don't want any part of that. So they told Hitler, well, you got to suppress this 5 million man army. We're scared shitless of them. They might change things in Germany internally without an external war. Hitler evidently said, well, what do I get out of this deal? They said, well, you get your personal guard, the SS. And so Hitler made the deal and all of that kind of stuff. So anyhow, I've had contacts with blacks through the years that have done me favors, and a couple of times I've done them favors and like that. And if you're going to win a war, you got to learn to be a little bit, change your tactics and use all kinds of tactics. And always remember to use the tactics that your enemy doesn't realize, that he won't think you're doing it. You know, I used to say you sit down at a piano and you take your finger and you go plink, 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 plink down the keyboard until you find a note that drives your enemy crazy. And that's the one you keep punching. Yeah, just like smiling at people. Smiling at your enemies. It drives them crazy. But you just keep plinking on a piano, trying different things until you find a key that drives them nuts. And I've tried to do that. And I've tried to be a moving target because I have adopted a lot of left-wing positions. And I think if the right wing had any brains, they'd do more about having dialogue with progressives. And progressives would do better if they would have dialogue with the right wing. So anyhow, but most people don't have the ability or the desire to go into the weeds and try to find something, try to find some tactic that works. That's why the right wing can never win and the left wing can never win in the end, because they're doctrinaire, they're both conservative, and they're both easy to manipulate. And if they find all your positions and exactly what you'll do or what you won't do, like all these right-wing groups that say, we would never be in violence, we would never commit violence, your enemy knows that's bullshit, because there's guys in any organization that may commit violence. And in the right situation, if you're not prepared to use violence, well, that's saying, I surrender. We will never totally go to total war against you. And I love it. If I was in a bar having a beer and a guy next to me didn't like me and said, but I would never do anything violent against you. Oh, yeah? Well, I sure as hell would punch you in the nose if you're not going to fight back. Anyhow, that's it. And I don't know what we're going to do today. I like that song that I just played by Confederate Railroad. I like that song. I don't like it that he shot a clerk at a convenience store and killed him, but the rest of the song I like. You know, another thing on the Christian right, they say they go by the Ten Commandments. Well, that's bullshit. World wouldn't be in the shape it's in if they could possibly do that. And they said that was from Moses, who never existed. He actually was a copy of a Babylonian god called Mises. And then Mises was a copy of another god way on back. So I've got a commandment, and I didn't have to look at spooks in the sky to get it. My commandment is, thou shalt not fail. Thou shalt not lose. Thou shalt be clever. Thou shalt be brave. Thou shalt have no real pity on your enemy, because they have no pity on you. Things like that is what I like. Yeah, but I'm not going to go into any war with a Jew handcuffs on my behind me, put my hands behind me, and put on these Jew religious handcuffs through the Christian church and all that kind of stuff. Come on, give me a break, boys. Let's get with it. And another, in all things, use logic. If it's not logical, dump it. And most of the things that the bulk of the masses of white people go by is illogical. Don't even make sense. It's crazy. Insanity. Now, at least once a week, I sort of like to give you a recommendation on movies. I'm not one of these guys, like I've told you before, says, oh, I never watch TV because a Jew made a movie. That's like saying I'd never use an AK-47 because a communist Russian made it. But anyhow, I have a couple of movies that I have mentioned, I think, before, but I'm going to mention them again. One is Stonehurst Asylum. Stonehurst Asylum. There's a lot of philosophy in that film. It makes a lot of sense, and you'll understand when you watch it. And the other one was this series, The Following. Now, The Following has got, what, about 4 CDs, and you can get it at the local store, video store. Only costs about 3.5, and it's about several hours of viewing, but it's well worth it. Whether you like the rationale for what the leaders were doing, that's beside the point. The point is the methods they used to do it. And I'd like to, for everybody that's within my hearing, to watch The Following and then let me know what you think. Or watch anything I recommend, like Stonehurst Asylum. What do you think? I don't want to be just the one guy flapping my lips out here. I'd like to get feedback. If you don't like my position, tell me. I'm not going to hurt you. You're probably bigger than I am. Well, let me play a little from my friend Max Kaiser, the Max Kaiser report on Russia Today. Now, Wall Street used to yell, "Oh, I heard he's a part Jew." I used to say, "Which part? His penis, his left ear, or his eyeball?" I listen for stuff that's important and I think makes sense and it's logical. And no matter where it comes from, to be perfectly honest, that drives a lot of conservative doctrinaire people up the wall, because you're only supposed to say, you're only supposed to go black and white, and that's it. But anyhow, let's listen to what Maxie has to say.
Welcome to the Kaiser Report. I'm Max Kaiser. Britain is suffering a plague of benefits cheats, sponging off the benefits of bank bailouts and endless free money, quantitative easing and 0% interest rates, secret trade deals, privatizations, and peerages. Right, Stacey?
Max, you would think that the riot police would be arresting all of these benefits cheats. Well, they are arresting benefits cheats, and a big show for all of the people to say, "We're doing something, see? Suspected benefit cheats arrested an early morning Croydon raid. Three people are arrested on suspicion of benefit fraud after two dawn raids by police officers and council officials. Residents at both households in the same West Croydon street are suspected of falsely claiming their marriages have separated, therefore entitling the women to claim more benefits. Apparently, riot police, at least a dozen, and you can see this photo here, they have helmets on, they're big riot police. I don't know how much it is, but maybe 30, 40, 50 pounds a week more, or even a month more, that these women were claiming. They say that they were possibly actually sleeping in the same bed as their so-called ex-husband.
We've reached a critical inflection point in this class war in Britain, and the austerity versus the various rat finks of the world who are stealing all the cash, because here you have a situation where these people in Croydon may be cheating. Technically, we can say that it's impossible to know at this point whether they're cheating. Now, contrast that with the recent HSBC scandal, the rat finks at the HSBC. Up until now, they've been saying, well, technically, we're not breaking the law. But now, as of this week, thanks to the excellent Panorama documentary on BBC, I must say, we can say categorically that HSBC technically broke the law. They technically broke the law. They can no longer run into the tall weeds and saying, well, technically, we're not sure because the law was, it maybe they did, maybe they didn't. No. HSBC technically broke the law. And now if you go back and you can see that they've done so in egregious ways for many years, whereas the people in Croydon here, you know, they're technically not breaking the law.
And, of course, HSBC benefited from all of the bailouts and the 0% interest rates and the quantitative easing. They benefited from that. Most people don't understand how that benefit happens, but they receive the benefit that the taxes that ordinary schlumps in a council estate have to pay. But here, HSBC was helping people to evade those taxes that provide for the funds that bail out the banking system that they helped create.
Right. HSBC and their former head, Lord Green, they're like a lottery winner who blows through their entire lottery winnings and is still, after a few years, insolvent and bankrupt. HSBC got huge bailouts. They got huge tax subsidies. They got 0% loans. And so it's like winning the lottery. And so too of all these big banks around the world. What did they do? Like they blew it on a crime spree. And I use that word. They're technically breaking the law, like a lottery winner going down to the corner shop, breaking it and stealing, you know, a six-pack of Schlitz. That's HSBC.
In this case in Croydon, the police came in riot gear because they said that they heard word that there were drugs there. And in fact, they did find some marijuana with this guy. So why is Lord Green, who was at that time ordinary Steve Green, running HSBC, and then he became a lord thanks to David Cameron, who made him trade minister after discovering that he was the head of HSBC when they were helping people to evade taxes? Well, we know for a fact, based on a deal, a deferred prosecution deal done with the U.S. authorities, with Eric Holder, the U.S. Attorney General, that HSBC laundered $7 billion worth of drug money. How do we know that there wasn't loads of cocaine in their possession? And we know that tens of thousands of people have died in Mexico because of the cocaine drug war. Well, why don't riot police show up at HSBC? This two-tier justice system, which is what we've talked about over the past 5-6 years, is that this is the problem. It's not necessarily that this is against the law and these guys in Croydon, if they broke the law, they deserve the justice. It's the fact that here we have, in the very same week, a situation where not only did these people receive benefits, i.e. the entire apparatus of HSBC and all those that they bailed, that they helped evade taxes, that they, or not only are they benefits cheats, but they don't want to pay the taxes that go towards the benefits that are given out.
The people in Croydon, there's a suspicion that they might be using drugs as part of the police's SWAT raid, essentially, into their homes, violating all kinds of statutes and laws. Whereas HSBC, as you rightly point out, they were caught red-handed laundering billions of dollars worth of cash from Mexican drug cartels, leading to tens of thousands of deaths, including many decapitations. So once again, double standard. HSBC decapitates people in the Mexican desert. That's good. So-called enemies out there in some other desert in the Mideast decapitating so-called enemies. That's bad. Why? Because Lord Green is Lord Green. And if he's a lord, then that's a good decapitation. If it's some guy in the Middle East who claims that he doesn't want to be droned from above and have his family murdered, oh, that's a bad decapitation.
And, of course, you mentioned peerages as a benefit cheat, in a way, in the United Kingdom. And it is. Since Tony Blair, we've had a system whereby you don't inherit your title anymore, but the prime minister can determine that you are a peer, you are a lord, you are therefore above all these other ordinary Croydon-dwelling sort of peasants. So here we have a situation where you must refer to him as Lord Green, the baron of some Pierpointy place out in the Shires.
Well, I mean, I can take pride in that as an American, we, during the American Revolution, put a lot of these so-called lords down. Okay, so I take pride in that.
Well, your great-great-grandfather is Lord Maxwell.
Aside from my great-great-grandfather being Lord Maxwell, that's different because they weren't British.
They're Scottish.
Okay, they're Scottish. British lords, we took a lot of those out, thank God. And, if the revolution were still going on, Lord Green would be hiding under his wife's dress at this very moment.
So we're not allowed to examine the lives of any of these people, right? Political apparatus, the Ed Milibands and David Camerons of the world, and Michael Gove, who walked past us, by the way, in the London Underground on the way here to the studio. Well, one of the quotes, and I hope this is actually in an Onion sort of article and that we're just mistakenly reading this, but because this sounds so macabre, because this early morning raid, it happened at 6:30 in the morning, and Gail Campbell, who is a local councillor at this place, or she's on the local council, she said, "We expect to see Mr. has spent the night in the same bed as Mrs."
Well, first of all, Croydon is the home of T-Rex, and therefore it should be completely historically set aside as a no-go zone for any kleptomatic cops and aristocrats who don't understand that Mark Bolan is probably the greatest thing to come out of this country since David Bowie, and no one should go into that particular part of Britain who doesn't at least can sing several of those songs. That's number one. Number two, whether it's the movement in Greece to overthrow the German Finkelgreens, Lord Finkelgreens of this world, or the Podemos in Spain. Britain's having their moment of comeuppance. It's coming soon. From the people are now organizing themselves. I saw there's a huge sympathy rally for Greece here in London. So it's not like the people in Croydon are just going to, pull down their pants and say, "Lord Finkelgreen, do me doggy." No, I don't think so.
So all of these, the benefit cheats of the oligarchy and the lord class, those who have had a peerage bestowed upon them, all of the benefit cheats, because of the benefits handed to them, and that includes 0% interest rates or negative interest rates, where NERP, zero is ZERP, and all of those benefits bestowed upon them, and all of the central banks buying up all the sovereign bonds, forcing everybody else in the world, all the other investors, all the pensioners, pension funds, mutual funds, forcing them into the Croydon of the investment world. And if you've ever been to Croydon, you'll see what I mean in these headlines. There's two quick headlines here. Lies, 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 and a bubble in burger. So apparently, you know, we saw the IPO of Shake Shack, and it went up 150% on the day. It was 108, which was the earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, is a quasi-estimate of the cash flow. So it was trading at a multiple of 108. So Bill Bonner looks at this, and he says that the double shake burger sells for $7.99. So to put it another way, a $10,000 investment gives you the equivalent in cash flow terms of about 11 hamburgers. Maybe they'll give you fries with that. By investing at it at $52.50, which it went up to on the IPO day, you were basically investing $10,000 gave you the equivalent of 11 hamburgers.
Also, near 0% interest rates, I just was reading something we've been talking about for years. It's just now people are figuring out. Pension accounts are now at the biggest deficit ever in Britain because of the low interest rates. So quantitative easing has now created the biggest pensions deficit in the history of Britain, as we predicted it would. So anyone who thinks they're going to get anything out of their pension benefit pool starting maybe in 2 years, they're going to get nothing because they have paid no interest. So all that pension money for the next 50 years, many billions of pounds, it went right into the pockets of Lord Finkelstein, Lord Finkelbaum, whoever, and he stole it. And HSBC broke the law. That's what they did. It's not technically they didn't break the law. It's technically they broke the law.
The UK will not investigate, but the US is apparently investigating HSBC again. We don't want to give Eric Holder any more sleepless nights, however. So where other, again, so we're investing in these outrageous valuations on not only property, but equity markets, the stock markets, because we're desperate for returns. Our pension funds are broke. And here is what else, the Croydon of the investment world, how our investors are being forced into the Croydon of the investment world. Bubble, meet the $25 million grilled cheese truck. So the grilled cheese truck company has four grilled cheese vehicles, and they have commenced trading on the over-the-counter market and under the term GRLD. That's their symbol. So they have 18 million shares outstanding and a recent stock price of $6, meaning the company has a market value of 108 million, which is weird because that's what Shake Shack trades at, a multiple of 108 times cash flow. Well, according to the company's financial statements, it has about $1 million of assets and almost $3 million in liabilities. In the third quarter of 2014, it had sales of almost $1 million, on which it had a net loss of more than $900,000. I can't think of a more interesting sign of the old irrational exuberance in equity markets than a publicly traded grilled cheese truck for, in this case, business trading at $100 million plus valuation. That sort of thing doesn't happen unless there is a significant excess in the market.
Right, markets go through cycles, and sometimes they trade at excessive highs, and they get wiped out, and they get blown apart. But clearly, in this case, with the grilled cheese truck, we're seeing an example of not fundamental analysis, technical analysis, but algorithms trading, gone rogue. Essentially, it's a rogue algorithm. But we got to leave it on that, Stacey. Thanks.
Maybe investors are hoping Jesus might appear on one of these grilled cheese sandwiches on one of these trucks.
Did he? I'm buying some. All right, stay tuned for the second half.
Thanks, Max. That was good. Same old thing. The people at the top raiding people's houses that might have cheated on welfare. You know, nothing ever anywhere near what the bankers cheat the poor people and the working class. Never close. But they go in with goons, 10 or 15 goons with machine guns, and then they find a little marijuana and they go crazy over that. And then they're even concerned whether it was the man's wife in the bed with him or vice versa. Jeez. And over here in Indiana, I believe they're doing it now. They're checking welfare recipients for drug test welfare recipients. Well, as far as I'm concerned, if you're really in that bad a shape, you deserve a little pot, something to get you through. Otherwise, you're liable to go off the top and go out and start shooting. Now, here we got a mass murder-suicide shooting planned for St. Valentine's Day. It was foiled by Canadian police in Nova Scotia, thanks to a tip just before the attack. The suspect was found dead and three more arrested. police said, declining to label the plot as terrorist. They should just label it crazy. A man and woman plan to, but not as crazy as the stuff the government pulls off in both countries. A man and a woman plan to go to a public venue in Halifax, I guess a shopping center, on February 14th with the goal of opening fire to kill citizens and then themselves. Royal Canadian Mounted Police said in a statement on Friday, those are the same police that threw my son and I on the ground in the mud for no reason at all in Canada. I never will forget. You know, I used to like Dudley Do-Right of the Mounties. Used to like Sergeant Preston of the Yukon. But once the way John and I were treated in Canada, I hate their guts. A senior police official confirmed that two suspects had plans to go to a mall to carry out a mass shooting on Wednesday, or Valentine's Day, AP reported. The two individuals involved were reportedly fascinated with mass murder and death, the official said. I'd like to have a little bit better explanation than that. I'm sure there was a little bit more to it. The police said that the planned attack is not being considered a terror act. Well, what the hell would you call a terror act? If I go down to the grocery store and shoot a bunch of people, to me, if there is a terrorist act, that would be a terror act. Not even unconventional warfare, or an attack tied to a particular religion at this point. Quote, I wouldn't characterize it as a terrorist event. I would classify it as a group of individuals that had some beliefs and were willing to carry out violent acts against citizens, unquote, said Nova Scotia RCMP commanding officer Brian Brennan, adding that the planned attack was not culturally based. You see how they dance around on all this bullshit? They dance around. And, well, you know, we don't want to offend the Muslims, but, well, I don't know. And evidently, it may have had something to do with it, you know. All the suspects are said to be in custody. Well, I think they just said it was a man and a woman. Quote, we believe we have apprehended all known individuals in this matter and eliminated the threat. We are not seeking any further suspects at this time in relation to this investigation, Brennan stated at a news conference. Police received a tip Thursday morning about a 19-year-old man from Timberlay and 23-year-old American woman from Geneva, Illinois, who allegedly had access to firearms and were a threat. Anybody that's got firearms is a threat, could be a threat. The female suspect was arrested with a 20-year-old man at the Halifax Stanfield International Airport. I guess that's where they were going to either blow people away or get on a plane and escape. She was arriving into the country and a man came to meet her, according to police. At 11 a.m., police apprehended the last suspect, a 17-year-old, in Coal Harbor. The role of the two suspects, 20 and 17, are still being determined by police. Well, here again, they're not talking about the race of the people. They're not talking about the religion of the people. They're not talking about anything. So anyhow, you'll probably get more information on that as time goes by. Well, here's the latest news from wonderful Israel and the Gaza Strip. An investigation carried out by AP has stated that 508 of the 844 victims in airstrikes on residential buildings during Israel's Operation Protective Edge murder spree that unfolded previous summer in Gaza were women, children, and elderly people. There you go. That Jew, God told him to do it. Yahweh told him to kill her ass. The agency studied 247 attacks that targeted residential buildings only, out of about 5,000 strikes conducted by the Israeli forces. Under the rules of war, civilian homes cannot be used as targets for airstrikes. That's a joke. just like World War II when they pattern bombed Germany and Germany bombed England. You know, all the rules, there are no rules of war. The rules of war is kill, 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 and win, win, win. The probe concluded that about 10% or 96 of these killings in the strikes were confirmed or suspected militants. Yeah, right. A further 240 dead were males between 16 and 59, whose names weren't linked to any armed groups at all. Finally, 508 of the 844 victims were women, whom Hamas says they do not recruit because they're second-class citizens, Muslims. Even in Orthodox Jews are second-class citizens. Children and elderly people in particular, children under 16 constitute about 30% of the total deaths. 280 killed among those 19 babies and 108 kids between 1 and 5 years old. Oh, God's chosen people really working it out, man. In 83 attacks, 3 of the more members of one family were killed. AP said the actual death toll, including actual militants, could be higher, as armed groups have not released detailed casualty lists. According to Israel's figures, about 890 militants were killed in Gaza, among them 590 from Hamas, 200 from Islamic Jihad, and 100 from other armed factions. A death toll in airstrikes on homes has not been provided. Israel has stated it hit only legitimate targets. Grandma was a legitimate target. There's a bitch hobbling off on her cane. Get her ass. That militants use residential buildings to store weapons and to hide their command centers. Well, actually, Gaza was their land. It was their, that's what, it was theirs. The fact that they hid weapons, just hiding the weapons is not a problem. If they use the weapons, well, anyhow, it's such a bullshit. It's nonsense. It's crazy. Nitwit Bibi should be in the courts up there in Belgium. He should be tried, hung by the neck until dead. There's no doubt about that. But he never will. He'll die of old age in his sleep. Just like our U.S. war criminals, you know, Bush and Cheney and all of them, and Rumsfeld, they'll all die in their sleep. Here's a funny statement coming out of Israel. Our position is very clear. Israel did not commit war crimes, Foreign Ministry spokesman Emmanuel Nahshon said. The Israeli authorities also stressed that they warned civilians of the coming strike when it was possible, through phone calls or knocks on the roof with non-explosive missiles. They warned them. Well, where in the hell are they going to run? That's a very small piece of property. Where in the hell they warn you and you run to the next block and they're bombing that block? I mean, what they say, our position is very clear. Israel did not commit any war crimes because we're the God's chosen people and we can do anything we want because God told us we could. Well, I see Morris Dees and his hump buddy, Mark Potok, are at it again. They're the masters of the half-truth or the quarter-truth, but never the full-truth. And they are masters at exaggeration. They put out a report. I sent it along to you. And now they've turned their fundraising apparatus towards the lone wolf that were everywhere. You know, Morris Dees, after the trial in Portland, he never mentioned me hardly at all for years. Now he's dredging my name up, trying to fuel up another a big fundraising situation from the little old ladies. The lone wolves are coming. The lone wolves are run for your lives. Run for your lives. It's unbelievable how they are allowed to twist the truth over and over again. Well, somebody is shooting up the town over in Copenhagen, Denmark. One civilian was killed and three police officers injured after shots were fired at a cafe in Copenhagen during a free speech discussion attended by controversial artist Lars Vilks and the French ambassador to Denmark, according to the Danish police. The assailant is still at large. Following interviews with witnesses, Danish police have said that evidence points to a single gunman and not to two, as previously reported. The suspect's photograph has been released. The meeting, art, blasphemy, and the freedom of expression was being held in Kredatetan Cultural Center in northern Copenhagen. The French ambassador, Francois Zimmeret, had just finished speaking at the event as the shots were fired at around 14:30 Greenwich Mean Time. Later, he confirmed in a tweet he was unarmed. Whoa, boy, I tell you, they're shooting up and down everywhere. Some 30 bullet holes were found at the site. The perpetrator fled the crime scene in a dark Volkswagen Polo that was located later in East Copenhagen. According to the Berlingske newspaper, one spectator was seriously wounded while three police officers sustained light injuries. 30 slugs, and that's all the injuries they were. These guys, boy, a lot of these guys that do this kind of stuff are really, really bad shots. Police confirmed that the 40-year-old civilian later died, though Danish police said that they aren't sure if the shooting was a terrorist attack. They are investigating it as one. Well, it's unconventional warfare, boys. That's it, period. Danish security forces, meanwhile, have said that the incident was likely a terror attack. This was later backed Prime Minister Helle Thorning-Schmidt. Quote, we feel certain now that it was a politically motivated attack. No kidding. And therefore it was a terrorist attack. Unconventional warfare attack. She told reporters close to the site of the shooting in which one civilian was killed and three policemen were wounded, quote, we're on high alert all over the country. Whoa. Well, they're showing a picture here. It's sort of fuzzy, but it looks like maybe the guy's got light skin. Could be a light-skinned Middle Easterner, but got a sock cap on. All it shows is his nose, his eyes, and his cheeks. So anyhow, here's a letter to the editor, or a letter to the Internet on this subject. Let's get something straight here. I believe that Israel is an illegal state and that they shouldn't be there. Okay? Wait a minute. Hold it. Yeah, let's get something straight here. I believe, how come this keeps bouncing around, the damn thing? Ha ha, face the facts, mate. Your entire establishment is full of child-raping pedos whom you support. Your entire establishment is kissing the buttocks of the Saudi regime. The Saudi regime pretends to be Muslim when in fact is a perversion of Islam. Well, how about that? Hey, what's going on over there in Ukraine with that Kiev government sponsored by all the big banks and the EU and the CIA and the arms makers and you name it? What's with those guys and all these Hollywood neo-Nazi CIA supported guys that are over there shooting up the town? Going to try to have a peace situation here starting on Sunday, but you know what's going to happen? These cowboys down there working for the Kiev government will do something to kick it loose, and it'll go right back to the way it was, because they must keep bugging Russia. They got to keep sticking pins in the big bear.
After 17 hours of negotiations in Minsk, we have Minsk 2.0. Is it a good deal or a lull, as I said in the introduction of the program? Go ahead.
Well, my opinion is that the agreement in Minsk is only a temporary peace for Ukraine. It's only a temporary truce for Ukraine peace and stability has not come to Ukraine in the long term. And why do I say that? Because the root of the conflict in Ukraine has not been addressed and remedied. And that root is the American government's goal of seeking to bring Ukraine into NATO in order to weaken Russia and isolate Russia on its western borders. So unless the American government abandons that goal, there will be a conflict at some point in the future in Ukraine, be it 2 years' time, be it 5 years' time, be it 10 years' time. We will be back in this situation, and Russia will not countenance Ukraine being in NATO. And so if the Americans are insistent, as they are, on attempting to weaken Russia and Europe by bringing Ukraine into NATO, then what has been decided this week in Minsk, as I said just now, it's merely just a temporary truce. And we can draw a parallel with Georgia. There was a war between Russia and Georgia in 2008 because the Americans are trying to bring Georgia into NATO. Now, despite a very, very bloody war between Russia and Georgia, a reasonable person would have thought that the American government would have abandoned its objective of trying to bring Georgia into NATO. Okay. But ever since 2008, the Americans are insistent on Georgia becoming a member of NATO.
You're asking for reasonable people here, and I'm afraid there are not very many of them. But I would say that there were quite a few in Minsk. I take my hat off to Hollande and to Chancellor Merkel. I think they really did go the extra mile. Jeffrey, if I go to you, Marcus kind of jumped ahead of my game plan here. The Americans weren't in the room. How important or unimportant is that when it comes to Minsk 2.0 and getting a ceasefire in Ukraine?
Well, first of all, I'm glad that they'll at least stop fighting for a while, hopefully permanently. But the real problem is that, and that's been the problem that diplomats with long experience with the Soviet Union have raised since the early 90s when NATO began expanding. This began under the Clinton administration, so it's a bipartisan deal here. And in Bucharest in 2008, the NATO declaration rejected giving Ukraine and Georgia membership action plans, that is, a pathway to membership, but the declaration says they will be members of NATO. So the real problem, yes, right now it's great that they've stopped fighting. We'll see whether they implement the accord as it's supposed to be implemented. Okay. But the real problem is that at root.
Okay, Jonathan, weigh in here, because I've taken a look at some of the details that have been released, and on paper, it doesn't look that bad. And I provocatively on Facebook said, you know, what did the Donbass get out of it? I got a lot of mixed reactions there, but maybe, you know, a summation of what we've heard already, I mean, at least maybe there'll be some kind of ceasefire. They'll stop killing people. Jonathan, weigh in here. What's the value of what we've just heard here?
Well, I think the value is quite hopeful. I mean, over the next 48 hours, there will be an increase in fighting, I'm sure, because the rebels want to try and capture this town of Debaltseve, which is an important railway junction held at the moment by Ukrainian government troops. And they probably would like to get that before the Saturday midnight deadline. But hopefully there will be then a real ceasefire, and then those other issues will be addressed, the prison swaps, the pulling back of heavy weapons, and the creation of a demilitarized zone. I mean, I do agree with the other speakers that these are the first stages of what has to be a much more complicated and long drawn out process. The second stage, of course, is the constitutional reform.
Exactly.
Reform the Ukrainian constitution and allow devolution, and I would hope to allow the non-alignment, or to enshrine the non-alignment of Ukraine as a part of its constitution, with international guarantees from the United Nations Security Council that the country is non-aligned and will not join any alliance, but will be protected.
Okay.
Sorry, boys, this peace deal is not going to last, because U.S. State Department will not allow it. And the CIA that works for, of course, the State Department and the Pentagon, they don't want it. They don't want peace over there. They want the Ukraine to be tightly into NATO. NATO is a criminal process. It should have been done away with decades ago. But they're keeping it around to try to promote specific skullduggery emanating from the State Department and the other areas of our government. It's not my government. I don't claim it anymore. But we'll see. I don't think that shutdown, that peacetime thing, that ceasefire will last a week. Well, I see that the outgoing senior Obama advisor, John Podesta, reflected on his latest White House stint Friday, listing his favorite moments and the biggest regrets from the past year. Chief among them, depriving the American people of the truth about UFOs. Podesta's longtime fascination with UFOs is well documented, as his brief political hiatus following 4 years as President Bill Clinton's chief of staff freed him up to pursue his otherworldly passion. Oh, that's interesting. He wanted Obama to do something about UFOs. Well, let's see what's going on here, boys and girls. It's interesting.
Former chief of staff, John Podesta. Podesta, also an advisor to President Obama, spoke at a 2002 press conference organized by the Coalition for Freedom of Information.
I think it's time to open the books on questions that have remained in the dark, on the question of government investigations of UFOs. It's time to find out what the truth really is that's out there. We ought to do it really because it's right. We ought to do it because the American people, quite frankly, can handle the truth. And we ought to do it because it's the law.
World. There was a time when people would cite flying saucers, and wherever they made reports, they were sometimes treated or ridiculed or called wackos or crazy people. What Dr. Hynek and his people are trying to do is present a forum where people can present the most unusual sightings and have them treated with dignity and without fear of being ridiculed. Would you please welcome from the Center of UFO Studies in Evanston, Illinois, Dr. J. Allen Hynek. Dr. Hynek. when you first get a report of a sighting, is your job to assemble evidence that will prove it to be so, or to assemble evidence to prove that it did not happen? You know, there are two ways to go on any investigation.
The first thing we do is to try to disprove it.
Mm-hmm.
Because what is the point of establishing, of perpetuating a myth or something that isn't so? And it turns out that some 90% of the raw reports, see, we have a nationwide police network, an 800 number that the police use, and we get reports every night from police departments or different parts of the country. Most of them are planets, twinkling stars.
Explainable or identifiable things.
IFOs, we call them, identifiable flying objects. But that remaining 10%, those are the ones we go after. Now, a UFO, the U in UFO, of course, simply means unidentified. It does not necessarily mean visitors from outer space. But it must be unidentified not just to the person who is puzzled by it, but it must remain unidentified after considerable study. Then and only then is it a UFO.
What are you investigating right now? What have been some things that have come up in the last couple of months that you're looking into?
Well, we have a very interesting case in Muscatine, Iowa, just comes to mind. Sometimes, you know, animals are the first things to give warning that something strange is going on.
Oh, any time. In California, for example, before an earthquake, the animal kingdom is aware of it long before we are. They do
things. That's true.
Things.
Now, we had a letter from a chap saying that what first called my attention to something going on was the fuss that the horses were raising in the barn. But this time it's rabbits. It's a rather interesting story. There is a chap that runs a toll gate at Muscatine, Iowa, across the river there. He runs from the 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. shift.
Works the all-night, too. Okay.
Yeah. And about 3 o'clock in the morning, it has been his custom for quite a while to feed the wild rabbits. He takes carrots and tosses them out, and the rabbits grab a carrot and dash off. At this time, at 10 minutes to 3, he goes out there, and the rabbits are just lying flat and immobile on the cement, not dead.
Okay.
But just as though they were petrified, paralyzed. And simultaneously, as soon as he sees that, he hears a humming sound, loud humming sound, and a large yellow object rises from across the river and comes across. And the whole thing lasted for some 6 minutes. As soon as it was gone, the rabbits jumped back to life and scurried off. And also, at the same time, we're still investigating, there was a concomitant power outage in Muscatine. Now, we don't know whether that had anything to do with the UFO or not, but it may have.
usually there is some kind of a power fluctuation or power
outage. So those are the sorts of things that we investigate. Mm-hmm.
All right. And but you have no, the jury's still out on this
jury's
one.
Jury's still out on that one, yeah.
What do you think the government knows about UFOs that they're not telling us? If you could say it in a sentence or two before I introduce Mr. Gersten here.
Yeah, that's his baby. And the point is that I was with Project Blue Book, of course, for a long while. In fact, it was as an astronomer that I got into this. I think it's always important to, for me, it's important to recognize that I am an astronomer and got into it because the Air Force needed an astronomer. And in fact, I continue to be an astronomer. I'm going to have a monthly column in Science Digest on astronomy, not on UFOs. Now, in my association with Project Blue Book, I know very well that it was not a scientific project. Also, I also know that they never would notify the media when an interesting case came up. They did everything they could to
keep it down.
So they definitely withheld information. I will not go so far as to say that it was a Machiavellian sinister cover-up.
Or conspiracy.
Conspiracy. Yeah. I don't like those terms. But withholding of documents, yes. And that's exactly what Peter Gersten has been so good at getting.
And so diligent in pursuing it through the Freedom of Information
diligent,
Act. Well,
yeah.
Let me do a station break here, and we'll bring Mr. Gersten out, and we'll have a little go at this.
Good.
We will continue with Dr. Hynek, and we'll meet Peter.
Well, there you go. My friends from the constellation of Orion are out there. You better watch out. Better watch out, man. It's amazing that they won't release all the records. And shows you when you live in a police state, which any time the government keeps everything secret, you're in a police state. Well, I see 20 killed, 65 injured after an attack on a Shia mosque over there in Pakistan. They really know how to carry on peaceful Islam. Well, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, the ISIS insurgents, took control on Thursday of the most western Iraqi town of al-Baghdadi, threatening an airbase where U.S. Marines are training Iraqi troops, the officials say. Al-Baghdadi, about 85 kilometers northwest of Ramadi in the Anbar province, has been besieged for months by the radical Sunni Islamist militants who captured vast swaths of northern and western Iraq last year. 90% of all Baghdadi interest district has fallen under the control of the insurgents, district manager Naji Arak told Reuters by phone. You know, they're attracting thousands and thousands of volunteers to this ISIS. Yeah. I think I heard something like 70,000 or something, some wild number. This reminds me of that show I recommended to you, The Following, because they had people everywhere, and they like to use knives to assassinate. And I think that's what you're going to find more and more with these ISIS people. They're going to just be all over the place and be all looking peaceful, and all of a sudden, yeah, get that knife out of my gut, you know. Well, that's it for today, boys and girls. Saturn's Day. I'll be back Moon's Day with more exciting, wonderful, uplifting news right from the bunker.
I always knew I was doing the right thing. Because you have a steadiness about you. And I believe in you. But it comes soon. And you must be smarter than your enemy. What are you trying to say? The Americans, they're very smart, but sometimes they can be incredibly stupid. They spend all this money and time and energy on the so-called war on terror. They put satellites up in space. They can ram a smart bomb up a camel's ass from a situation room 5,000 miles away. But every time the U.S. kills an Al-Qaeda leader, what happens? There's a new one before the body's cold. You do it a million times. And they never get it because the real solution always eludes them. That is, do nothing. has shut down a fundamentally flawed system. All you gotta do is step out of its way, and it'll shut itself down. Nature has a way of correcting itself.